The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Tan Chung Han, myself, Sharad Kutin. Han is going to be speaking to Tim Mahalan, the president of TJM Limited in Chicago. And the government shutdown there is one of the issues you're going to be talking about.
Good morning, Tim. All right, so U.S. Congress has just passed a bill to narrowly avoid that government shutdown that they were headed for in this weekend. So, but still, I mean, it's just a two-week stopgap measure, right? So will this have any kind of overhang on Trump's tax agenda?
Well, I think it really has none. It might be used as some sort of leverage, but I mean, by this time, we should be used to these type of coming up to the edge of the debt ceiling by now. But I think there's no way that, especially with this Congress now, Republican-dominated, that it's ever going to lead to any type of disaster. Maybe some negotiating, but I think it'll have a minimal impact on the tax bill.
Still, one of the criticisms of the proposed tax plan is that it undermines fiscal discipline. So based on what you know, right, do the cuts ultimately pay for themselves, or will it give the U.S. government a more solid fiscal base, at least to avoid the threat of these continued shutdowns, right? You know, or are we going to, like you said, just expect the federal government to just stumble from one deadline to another?
Well, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. This not pay for itself. I mean, we have a debt over $20 trillion. I mean, who's counting? So in my view, in my humble view, and I think Art Laffer would probably, I'm borrowing from his Nobel Prize winning piece, that I think that the supply side, or what you're going to do, is you need economic growth and a stronger nominal GDP growth to pay his debt down. And I think that in and of itself, the tax cuts, and as long as they're not demand-oriented, because that's what we don't need, and it's business-oriented, which will spur stronger nominal GDP growth, then I think you're making progress, and that's how you cut the debt, not by raising taxes.
Now, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, we're going to need stronger economic growth in the U.S. So how much will these tax cuts, if signed by year end, or, you know, if it gets signed at all, you know, how will that affect overall household spending? Because already you got U.S. household optimism that hit a 13-week high, according to the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index. U.S. consumer sentiment set for its best year since 2001, with preliminary data for December due out later tonight, Malaysia time. So really, how much more upside is there to the U.S. consumption story?
Yeah, I think that on a direct basis, it'll be almost zero, negligible. And that's what a lot of people are complaining about. Hey, my tax bill's not going to go down. It might go up, you know. But that's not what the tax cut is aimed toward. The big linchpin of this tax cut is in corporate tax reform. And so long as they don't let these companies, like let's say, repatriate the trillions they have overseas and buy back stock and pay dividends, so long as they don't let them do that and incent them for capital expenditures and for business formations and that sort of thing, I think it's a good thing. But from a demand side, I think it's meant purposely for zero. Listen, if it were a demand situation, you certainly the first trade you should do is sell bonds.
Got it. Now, speaking about U.S. corporates, you know, we have obviously seen them taking up a lot of the slack in the unemployment space there. So we've also got last month's U.S. non-farm payrolls that's due out at 9:30 p.m. Malaysian time tonight. Your expectations for that data?
I think more of the same. I mean, you're not going to get the 200,000-300,000 month increases. So I think the unemployment rate is still pressured down towards 4%. Wages are what people are going to be looking at. And again, I think with these tax cut bills, notwithstanding the Senate version, which I don't like, but they're in conference, by the way, I think is really geared towards getting real wages to rise. Finally, we haven't had that. We've been stagnating for many, many years. In fact, actually gone negative throughout this cycle with real wage growth. So I think that that's going to be something important to watch tomorrow, be the wages. But I think it's still more of the same, which means there's nothing wrong with this economy at the face of it.
And your views are pretty much in line with the Bloomberg Surveys median estimate. I think it's calling for 190,000 gains in non-farm payrolls. We'll certainly keep an eye out for that. And then a quick check-in with you, Tim, on the Fed decision that's due next week. All go for a rate hike?
Oh, yeah. Baked in the cake. Done deal. And what is it, 3 to 4 more next year? So depending on what comes out of this tax bill, next year will be 3 to 4 rate hikes. But, you know, normalization of rates, I think we get to 2%. That's when I think there'll be a stop and recheck on what's going on. But I think there's no question about it in anybody's mind. And I think that the consensus is for 3 next year, and I'm probably leaning more towards 4.
Yeah, according to Fed Fund Futures, 98.3% chance of a rate hike next week. All right, let's start with something happening in your own, in your own backyard in Chicago. So going into this weekend, the CBOE set to kick off trading of Bitcoin futures, then with the CME entering the fray a week later. You fancy your chances at taking a dip in this space?
You know, there's lots of buzz about it. I don't think these are well thought out as far as other contracts have been, and particularly on design. I'm not so, I'd say, bullish that the contract is going to take off. I think there's going to be some disappointment in it. And I think a lot of it will be the design. They're cash settled, cash index settled, not physical settled. And I think that's an issue. So I think that this is a start, but I think this is not by any means going to be the final product. But I don't expect a big affair here on Sunday.
Now, Tim, when you say it's not well thought out, are your concerns mainly in the KYC space or knowing your clients, or is it from the liquidity perspective or regulatory? Which areas of concern, you know, are most troubling right now?
I think the design of the contract itself, I think, is a problem. And also these exchanges, you know, one of the reasons they can't do physical is the legacy systems that they have, which I think is, counter to what Bitcoin and the blockchain is really all about. So, you know, again, I think there's a need to volatility. Everything's there for it, but I think it's a contract there. But I think that, you know, who really has a handle and a grip on this? This whole, you know, phenomenon. And I think you, but from what I'm seeing and what I'm understanding right now, lots of enthusiasm for Bitcoin, the Bitcoin futures, and, oh, by the way, I forgot the most important thing, 35% margin.
Yeah, 35%, at least that's lower than, I think, Japan's 55%, though. But, I mean, still, you know, who cares about, you know, who's really got a handle on this? Because I'm looking at Bitcoin right now. It's well above $16,000, 16,279 right now. So do you see this being a case of irrational exuberance? Or, you know, are there perhaps some underlying fundamentals that can really support the case for cryptos?
Well, people are buying it because it's going higher. That always scares me. However, if you had 5% of the gold buyers, or the gold people would be gold buyers into Bitcoin, Bitcoin would be 25,000. You know, I've seen some projections from some knowledgeable people, at least that I think are knowledgeable in that space, to think Bitcoin could be 200,000, 250,000. Who knows? But I do know that people are buying it because it's going up, and for that sole reason. So therefore, I do think you're going to have some volatility. But, you know, people are like, hey, I got to get some because what if it does go up 200,000 or 500,000? You know, and I think that's the mentality. So, again, not a value-based proposition for me, but if you really want to break it down, I think you could make a case for some for it to, you know, 25,000 if you would take the analogy with the gold market.
Well, nevertheless, going to be an exciting weekend over there in Chicago. Hey, Tim, always a pleasure speaking to you. That was Tim Mahalan, president of TJM Limited in Chicago.
And soon we'll be looking at the Moody's rating as well as retail earnings. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar, just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.